Welcome to Idaho Speaks, the place to learn about candidates and issues important to Idaho. My name is Ed, and I created this channel to overcome the media bias that plagues our communities and our state. When presented all the information, I believe you, the voter, will make the best decision for our future. At Idaho Speaks, we will give you the side of the story being hidden by mainstream media and big tech giants.
My name is David Worley, and I'm the Southeast Idaho interviewer for the Idaho Speaks team. Our goal is to give you, the voter, as much access as possible to the field of state and local candidates around Idaho. Ed and I both do interviews, so if you as a candidate find yourself in a situation where you need to speak directly to the voters and are having trouble getting through the mainstream media, please reach out and we will do our best to get you on the program. We want to give Republican and conservative candidates a platform to communicate their ideas in a long-form format so that you, the voter, has the best information available to make your choice on election day.
Idaho Speaks, your issues, your candidates, your state. Welcome to Idaho Speaks. Okay, we're just going to jump right into it because, as you all know, education is one of those issues that is just most important to me. And honestly, if there's anything that you could vote for that is more important than an education, I don't know what it is. But on May 17th, we have a big choice. We got three great Republicans running for state superintendent of public education, and you've got your work cut out. But good news, you've also got Idaho Speaks, because all three candidates have come on Idaho Speaks multiple times. And with me on the phone today for her last hurrah, the last opportunity to talk with you folks, Debbie Critchfield. Debbie, thank you so much for taking time to talk with Idaho Speaks today.
Thank you so much. And I couldn't agree more about the importance of this decision.
Isn't it just so critically important? I mean, we got the DOD calling parents domestic terrorists. I don't know that
outrageous.
We can. Yeah. So let's catch up first before we start talking issues. How is the election season been to Debbie?
Oh, it's been incredible. The ability to travel around, you know, I've had a year-long campaign. I'm just days away from when I first announced a year ago. And it's just really, it's providing me this incredible opportunity to listen and learn and begin the dialogue on how we improve education and how we can really use what this momentum has brought to us, the attention and all of that, to not only empower parents, but I'm looking to empower students and teachers as well.
Now, this isn't the first time you've run for any office, is it?
Well, no. I ran for a local school board position. Oh, boy. It's got to be a little more than 10 years ago now. And so, but other than that, I mean, as far as a statewide position, you want to talk about jumping into the deep end.
Yeah.
That's pretty much, you know, what that's felt like. But you know, I've taken experiences that I've had in other volunteer roles in education and really inserted them into how we do the statewide. So, I mean, I've been in living rooms, classrooms, small and large business settings, and everywhere in between over the last year so that I could further my understanding of where Idahoans want the direction of education and how that impacts our Idaho communities.
Well, and that's kind of what I want to focus on a little bit here in the first third of the episode. It's the campaigning process, if you will. I mean, you've now traveled around the state. You've sat with thousands of people, thousands of Idahoans. What's the one thing that sticks out in your mind the most that inspires you, drives you? I don't know how you want to phrase it, but impels you forward in what you're trying to accomplish?
To me, that really comes down to three key pieces, and I'll lead off those three pieces by saying there is no question in my mind that people are ready for change. They feel as though the system is broken, and I don't care if we're talking about parents or teachers or business leaders. The three things that drive me and why I'm running for state superintendent is because our teachers deserve more. our parents are expecting more, and frankly, our kids need more. And great schools matter for our state, and that doesn't just accidentally happen. We have got to have intentional leadership to drive the changes and to bring about the needs that our students have, and how we take the educational system and match it with where we want to be.
Now, as you've gone around the state and you've done a lot of events with multiple candidates, it's kind of like like a traveling roadshow, it seems like, and you know, event, and they'll have like 14 or 15 candidates, it seems like, that comes in. So you, in addition to state superintendent of public education, you know, there's people running for attorney general and state senators and House of Representatives. Of the presentations that you're hearing while you're sitting waiting for your turn to get up to the microphone, what are you hearing in commonality amongst all of the other candidates running for office?
What an interesting question. I'm thinking as you're talking, as you said, yes, I say we as in some campaign folks, and occasionally my husband and some of my kids have been able to come with me. But anyway, I think the common theme is this. As a state, candidates and others recognize that Idaho is at this pivotal place. The growth that we've seen economically, people moving into the state, the outside influences that feel as though they're knocking at our doors. How do we protect and maintain the Idaho that we know? How do we protect and support and further the goals that we have for our students, if I'm taking that education slant? That seems to be a common theme, that we know that we've got this treasure in the country. And others are learning that, and they're seeing that. And as we get more people into the state, how we balance all of the interests while maintaining that fundamental piece of what makes Idaho magical and good. There are different approaches to that. And I guess that's why we have the election cycle that we did do. We'll have people that'll step forward and say, well, this is where I think we need to go, or this is how I think we need to solve this, or how we do any of these things. And so it's the manner in which people want to apply solutions that is a big distinguishing piece among candidates.
Now, when you look at almost a year ago, when you entered into the race, you had a vision, you had a set of solutions that you were going to campaign on. And now you've been campaigning for a year, and you've been in those living rooms, and you've been face-to-face with parents and voters alike. What have you learned, or what have you changed because of the campaigning process that now makes you an even better candidate?
I believe that the platform pieces and the messaging that I put forward were confirmed and emphasized, more strongly emphasized. I had ideas and what I believed were the needs for the educational side of the state, what I'd already known. And I had put all of those together in a way to say, this is where I believe as a state we need to head. You know, here's my vision, which puts skills and work readiness right at the core of an Idaho education. All of those were absolutely just, again, emphasized and confirmed to me as I went around the state. And some of those strands, for example, a financial literacy piece, was a part of that overall vision. But as I got more into the campaign season, I drew that out in a bigger way, because I noticed that when I would bring that up as a, hey, and also when we're talking about preparing kids, it's got to include this. The reaction and support that I received out of that told me I need to bring that closer to the top and make sure that that gets emphasized so that people understand what that whole piece is. And so it's been satisfying in that regard to say, okay, those things that I felt and had heard and listening and all of those things, I put that together. I was right. I was, you know, I captured what those feelings were.
Fantastic. Let's talk about your vision for Idaho schools. Now, this isn't the first time you've been on the program. This is your fourth interview with Idaho Speaks. And I encourage folks, go back and listen to the episodes, not just Debbie, but hear the other candidates. And you can compare and contrast amongst the three folks running for state superintendent. But Debbie, specifically for you, I want to focus on a few of your vision ideas and then kind of flush them out just a little bit deeper online. And I'm going to start with CRT. I mean, you state very clearly on your website, you've stated it very clearly every time you've been on Idaho Speaks, no CRT. Yet when the newspaper gets hold of those statements, they criticize you. They criticize everybody for that matter. Says, well, we're not teaching CRT. CRT isn't part of the education system. I'm going to give you the microphone here, and can you explain how on one side we can say we're not going to allow CRT, and on the other side, the media outlets can get away with saying, and we're not doing it anyway?
You've very nicely summarized my experience for the last year on this topic. I've talked with parents who have brought materials to me and shared conversations with me. Sometimes the topic or the conversation was related to CRT. Other times it wasn't CRT specific, but nonetheless something inappropriate that for me as a parent, I would have also taken pause and said, yeah, I'm not comfortable with that being a part of what's in my child's class. I believe that these two sides, the reason they so coexist is because there are elements of both sides of this coin that are true. I have not seen a school board that has adopted a curriculum that was for CRT, that was, hey, this is exactly what we wanted to get into our classrooms. I have not seen that effort. And so I think that I'm hoping that that's the side of the media saying, well, it's not being taught in our schools. Well, not in a formal way, as far as, you know, this is what we're going to do statewide or even district-wide. I have not seen that. But I absolutely can't deny the fact that I have seen pieces and strands and, had conversations, even with teachers who later, when they really wrapped their minds around the topic, said, looking back, I realized, yeah, this probably was not something that I should have brought into the classroom. And so on the state superintendent side, where I look at this, our districts want help. They want support in how to talk about it with their communities. They want help on how to be the most transparent. They want help in curriculum selection. Yes, it's a statutory authority for a local board to make those curricular decisions. However, I have yet to talk to a board that wasn't open to having help in the process of refining what books they have. And I would like to see the State Department of Education, and this is what where one of the first places I'll go on this topic, create a repository or a library, whatever you want to call it, of curriculums from across the nation that are free to low cost to high cost, which is a lot of what they are now, so that when a local board goes to make a decision, they can go to a place, a reliable source that says, well, we're looking at getting new science books this next year. What's available out there? Because I'm telling you, the school districts in Salmon and in Bear Lake County and others, 70% of rural Idaho, they don't have the expertise or the resources to really dive into some of these things that are coming into the classroom. And then related to that, how can I help support and with Fidelity partner with districts to make sure they follow the process of engaging the community in these decisions?
So let me ask the follow-up question then, and I know that listeners are thinking right now, okay, that's all fine and well. You say no CRT, and you're going to provide state-suggested or approved curriculums that the local jurisdictions can choose from. But on the other side of the equation, how are you going to be able to fulfill the promise to the parents that you, as the state superintendent of public education, will ensure CRT, even incidentally, doesn't creep into the classroom?
Well, one of the things that I did 2 years ago before I was even running for office was sit at the table at the creation of House Bill 377, which for many, they know that that outlawed, if that's the right terminology, the use of any public funds for these materials. To my knowledge, there has been no follow-up or no guidance or whatever word you want to use, policing. I don't know if that's the right word even. Of districts who need to be following the statute that's already in place. And so, you know, I was the only education official in the room at the table with the legislators as it went through both houses, then later signed by the governor. So I clearly know what's in there. And from our current superintendent 2 years ago to now, what's happened? There's been no dialogue. There's been no discussion. How are districts keeping the law as it stands? And if those things need to be furthered, whatever the whatever is in there needs to be strengthened, that's another role that the state superintendent has.
Gotcha. Now, on my Vision for Idaho Schools, on your website, debbieforidaho.com, you have workforce readiness. And this line mm-hmm. kind of jumps out at me, being, I think, one of the last generations that went through public school that had trades preparation. We still had a metal shop and an auto shop, and we had the ability to go from high school to a career. I'm assuming workforce readiness speaks to that type of preparation, but what does workforce readiness to Debbie Critchfield mean?
Those things that we, in addition to the fact that when a student graduates from an Idaho high school and you get that diploma, that means you can do something. And if you choose to go and pursue an academic career in college or something related to that, that's fantastic. We want you to be able to do that. What we have not been good at in the state is providing the access and availability of everything else. And so when a student leaves high school, they should be able to step into a work setting knowing that they have some basic skills that come with that. I'm gonna give you an example real quick. Twin Falls High School. Their first year welding teacher at the high school told me that for the last 2 years, he has turned away 100 students who want to start a beginning welding program. 100 kids.
Wow.
When you go into the community of Twin Falls, which is the manufacturing hub of Idaho, any business there that's involved in manufacturing in some form or another wants every welder they can possibly find. So we have the demand on the business side. We have a supply of students on the education sector. What's the chokehold? Right in the middle, we've got a system that doesn't work anything around students who are looking for something that is a non-academic pathway. And I don't want to make it sound that because you're a welder, that doesn't mean you don't have to have knowledge or skill or knowledge. You do. But I'm hoping that, you know, there's people see the difference there. And so what is it that we're doing? And I know what we're doing. We're constricting the supply to the demand. So when I hear a teacher tell me they turn away 100 kids, then I say, what would it take for you to be able to do this? Well, the money that a district has to create some of these programs is diluted because there are so many prescriptive line items coming from the budget from the state. So they don't have the instructor, they don't have the resources, they don't have some of these things. Well, I have talked to these very same businesses who say, we will help with equipment, we will help partner. There are things that industry will do, and it's not just welding. I'm just using that as an example.
Sure.
To help further these outcomes. And so it is a shame. It's worse than a shame. I think it's a disservice to our students that you have kids that are interested and potentially have talent and abilities to contribute to their community, and here are jobs right here in your community that you can do, but nothing about our system honors that. We are very good at giving kids credits for college as well. You're in high school, very good at that. We're not good at giving credits for anything else. I want to see more apprenticeships, more internships, more work opportunities, job-related experiences.
So, I mean, it sounds like you've got the answer right at the tip of your tongue. I'd like to go ahead and formalize that so that you can just say it right here in Idaho Speaks. So how do you fix that? As superintendent of public education, how will you fix that?
I will directly work with school districts to create the private and public education partnerships. I've done it before in my own area. I know how to get that done, how to start the conversations. And so they've got to be able to do that so they can leverage the resources that they've got. I want to look at how we, or the requirements for high school graduation. We are looking at something that is more than 30 years old on what we're asking our kids to know before they leave high school. I don't know that all of those things are still appropriate, applicable, or helpful. So we've got to look at high school graduation requirements. And then we've also got to look, again, at what we take credit for and opening up schedules so that kids can have that on-the-job experience, which is learning, knowledge. There's so many transferable skills that a student takes with them away from a classroom. Less about seat time when you're a junior and a senior. I want to transform that junior and senior year, less about the seat time and not limiting just to the knowledge, but also to doing and being out. This is a low risk time for students to explore things that they're interested in. Our students want to have and deserve a jump start on everything that they're going to do outside of high school. Education is not an outcome. Education is the way in which we provide opportunities and the experience for our students to make decisions as adults and as citizens.
Fantastic. Now, the last one that I want to bring up, and then we'll jump to your list, local control. You know, this last winter, when parents took to the school board meetings, the DOJ took to the microphone and called them domestic terrorists. To me, parents getting engaged at the school board is the implication of local control. If mom and dad are going to the school board saying the education's not up to snuff, I mean, we only half of our kids are testing proficient in math and reading. And if the parents are starting to complain about that, yet being called domestic terrorists by the Department of Justice, what's a Superintendent Critchfield going to do about that?
There are a number of things, and you are correct. I believe that you're correct, or we share the opinion that parents engaging in conversations with their school board is exactly how this was designed to do. There's a reason why we locally elect boards to reflect the expectations and cultures and values of individual communities. I want to strengthen that and help that. How do I do that? One, many of our boards are not good at or comfortable with reaching out to the community in meaningful ways. Here's an example of how this happens. It is not meaningful. For many districts, the only way that a parent can talk to a school board member or have some of these conversations is to sign up to be at a local board meeting where they maybe get 2 minutes in the public. There's no interaction. You say your piece and then someone on the board says, thank you for coming tonight. That's not meaningful. That's not meaningful for the board, and it's not meaningful for parents. Meeting parents where they are is a very critical part of this. Don't hold a meeting at noon on a Tuesday when everyone's at work and ask for community feedback. Don't put out a survey when you don't intend to use the results of it. For the last 9 years, my day job in my school district of Kaja, which is the 13th largest district in the state, has been community engagement. I've been doing this. I know how to engage the community and have and facilitate that with a local board to get the results, which I believe is a feeling that the board is listening and that parents have avenues to get there. Leadership, modeling, how we do those things. Local districts don't want to be micromanaged, and I don't want to micromanage them. But leaving a local district to make local decisions does not mean leaving them alone. That there's a reason why there is a statewide superintendent. That person should be the advocate, the champion, the modeler of how you cooperate, how you do all of these things. You provide strategies and tools. None of those things have been happening for the last 8 years. So it is not surprising to me at all that not only in Idaho, but, you know, we're a reflection of things nationally, that people are frustrated. And how we do that is critical. The lines of communication, the trust has got to be reestablished.
Beautiful. Now, what is your vision? What's your top vision for when you're elected? What are you going to do first?
Wow, there's a lot of things that are number ones for me. We've got if I'm going to look at the financial side of this position, you've got a superintendent that oversees $2 billion of taxpayer money. This is a critical role. You've got to have somebody that understands how this works. We've got to look at the funding model. And before we look at how we fund schools, I want to do a complete audit and review of where we are with the money that we spend. I'm not convinced that with all of the new investments coming into education over time, that some of the things that we're funding are the priorities that we have now. There's been no audit in the last 8 years. As things get funded, they just seem to stay in perpetuity. And I'm going to be that elected official that goes back and says, what's the ROI on all of these things? And if we're not getting it, why not? And what needs to be different about it? On the support side, as far as the Department of Education, it's got to be a service center for our district, and we cannot do that when it is all centralized in Boise. I want to decentralize that into more regional support centers, and it's not going to take more money. There are ways to do this where we bring it out to the people so that our district have all of the things we've talked about, Ed, take in a level of support and service that is not taking place. For teachers, we have got to prepare and support our teachers for the modern classroom. The number one thing that I hear from teachers, they don't know how to deal with severe behaviors in classrooms. They are begging for help in these areas because they weren't trained for it. And that's at the top of my list for our teachers. Our classified and our super classified people, I want to look at developing some type of a career ladder for those individuals. They need to see we've got to attract and retain people just like any other business around. And we want to honor the work that they do similar to our teachers. For our students, we've just talked about this, putting skills and work readiness at the focus of a high school education. And that has to start in our earliest grades with a strong foundation in reading. We've got to have kids that can read. And then on the parent side, reestablishing trust that education is serving their values, is serving their needs. And how we do that locally, we've got to look at a true accountability system. The real accountability of the school district rests with the community members. It doesn't rest with the state, and it certainly doesn't rest with the federal government. And so that's got to be realigned, in my opinion.
Marvelous. Now, how do people learn more about you and your campaign in these final days?
Debbie for Idaho, and it's the number 4, .com. And on there, you know, you can reach out to me. There's email. There's lots of issues, lots of things to understand about me. We've been very pleased and honored to have so many endorsements from across the state. And you know, see what someone else that you maybe know thinks about me and the work that I've done over nearly 20 years in education, being a champion for kids, advocating for parents, and working to make sure that the system that we have is wrapped around the priorities that we all feel.
Now, having been the station where you have spent almost 2.5 hours talking with us, and we greatly appreciate that, we do keep track of those kind of stats. But I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for coming on to Idaho Speaks and being so open with the voters. Last couple of minutes that we have available, is there any final thoughts you'd like to leave with the listeners?
Absolutely. And Ed, I will say to you, I appreciate the opportunity. You've been fair to me. I've thought that you've had very thoughtful questions, and any opportunity that I have to share who I am and the messaging, I consider that a win on my end. I'll say this. There's been a lot of discussion about parents versus teachers, or I feel as though that push and pull is taking place. We absolutely need and want engaged parents. And we also need teachers who are prepared with the tools and have what they need. Added to that, and we've talked about what our students need. As a state, I'm going to say this to your listeners. You as a listener, need a state superintendent who listens and acts. We can set high expectations. We can have the type of education that we all want to have in Idaho. And you have to have a leader that's able to get that done. There will be some similarities and some things that aren't similar about myself and my opponents. But I am confidently telling the viewers or the listeners that my experience, background, knowledge, and everything that I have sets me apart. I'm ready to leave day one. I don't need 1 year. I don't need 4 years to figure it out. I have the ability to advance what it is that we're talking about. We haven't been there. We've been spinning our wheels for the last 7 years with one candidate. And with another candidate, I don't believe he has the temperament to be able to get the job done or work with others. And so it's time for that intentional leadership with someone who has got the skills and the ability to bring people together, and we can work towards the same vision. So I'm asking for people's vote on May 17th, if not before.
Great. Thank you so much, Debbie. We've reached the end of the episode, but not the end of the issue. Please share this episode with your friends and family. If you have questions or would like to share your own issues and ideas, visit www.idahospeaks.com and click Share an Issue. Your state, your voice, Idaho Speaks.